This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss the deadly consequences of Israel's ongoing military assault on the children of Gaza. According to the UN Children's Fund, more than 50,000 children have been killed or injured in Israel's deadly war since October 2023. 17,500 children have lost their lives. Most of them were killed by indiscriminate bombings. But a deeply unsettling subset of these deaths stands apart, children arriving at trauma centers with gunshot wounds. Doctors in Gaza report seeing these cases nearly every day. A new documentary from Al Jazeera's Fault Lines and Reveal, it's called Kids Under Fire. It tells the story of 20 American doctors who volunteered in Gaza. They report a disturbing pattern of children shot by Israeli forces. These doctors, who have seen the devastating impact of the war on children, are speaking up and demanding accountability. Here is a clip from Kids Under Fire. You will hear from Dr. Mark Perlmutter, Dr. Mimi Syed, and Miranda Cleland with Defense for Children International Palestine.
It's not a rogue soldier that lost their ethics. It's widespread throughout the entire Gaza Strip. There's a definitive pattern of Israeli soldiers targeting quite specifically children.
I didn't want to believe that children were being shot. Nobody wants to think that other humans are capable of annihilating children in that way.
I had 18 cases of children with shots to the head. When you see one or two coming in that time that I was there, then I could say, maybe it's an accident, it's crossfire. But when you see that a child is being shot in the head every day, multiple times, in the abdomen, in the chest, those are intentional. Someone is doing that.
According to the Gaza Ministry of Health, children make up over a third of the death toll in Gaza. Nearly 16,000 have been killed, mostly by bombing. Doctors say it's impossible to know how many were shot, since Gaza's healthcare system has been destroyed by the Israeli military.
Israeli forces have killed so many children in Gaza that it is most likely we will never know all of their names.
That is a clip from Kids Under Fire. It's a new documentary from Reveal and Al Jazeera's Fault Lines, and you can watch that online. On Wednesday, in a powerful address to the UN Security Council, American trauma surgeon Dr. Feroz Sidwa, a doctor that we've had on the show and who was featured in the documentary, delivered a firsthand account of Gaza's collapsing healthcare system. He's drawing from two medical missions to Khan Yunis. He said, "I am not here as a policymaker, but as a physician bearing witness to the deliberate destruction of healthcare, the targeting of my colleagues, and the erasure of a people." He said 83% of American medics in Gaza reported seeing children shot in the head or chest. He said, "This is not a system failure. It has been systematically dismantled through violations of international law. You cannot claim ignorance when children no longer want to live." Today, we are joined by Josh Rushing, an Emmy-winning journalist, founding member of Al Jazeera English, and senior correspondent for its award-winning documentary program, Fault Lines. Hi, Josh. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me, Rose. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Najib Amini is producer for Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. Since joining Reveal in 2018, Najib has worked as a production manager, reporter, and producer. Hi, Najib. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us, and thank you for giving space to this story.
Well, thank you so much. Najib, can you tell us how you at Reveal came to collaborate with Josh at Al Jazeera's Fault Lines?
It's funny, I was working on another story and happened to be in D.C. and ran into Josh's boss, Layla Al-Aryan. And we had been talking about, essentially we were working on the same story following the same doctors. And it just made sense to try and collaborate on this because I believe Josh and his team were focusing on one very specific angle that they had done extensive reporting on. And we on the Reveal side, on the audio side, had been focusing really on just, the one or two doctors, their specific journey intimately And so it just made sense to try and, you know, team up and collaborate. And very fortunate to, you know, work with Josh and his team and essentially get the story out that we did. But I think the story of these doctors has been told by a number of organizations. And I think it's a testament to their efforts, not just going to Gaza and trying to help, but continuing to try and, you know, spread the word and get the word out there. You just saw Feroz testify in front of the UN Security Council this week. I believe Dr. Mimi Sayed was in Sarajevo taking part of, I believe it was the Gaza Council or something of the sort, where she also is continuing to provide her testimony. So it's more a testament to them than it is, you know, us as reporters.
And Josh, I mean, you all did an incredible job of not only finding these doctors and talking to them about their harrowing experiences, but in the case of Dr. Mimi Sayed, a board-certified emergency medicine physician who's traveled to Gaza twice, she tells the story of 4-year-old Mira Al-Darini. You also interviewed her mom and dad and witnesses who said she was shot in the head outside her family's tent in Khan Yunis on August 24th by an Israeli drone or quadcopter armed with a gun. So in that case, it's very powerful because we hear Dr. Mimi Sayed talk about taking care of Mira, but we also hear from her parents.
Yeah, at Fault Lines, we kind of early on in the war on Gaza teamed up with a production team in Gaza that has been nothing short of amazing. We have made, I think, 4 films now. We made a full-length feature called The Night Won't End, another one called Starving Gaza. Now we have Kids Under Fire. I feel like there's another one that I'm forgetting, but maybe it's just those 3. But in each one of those, we used this production team there, which is kind of incredible because not only are they, like, the quality of their filming, if you go look at Kids Under Fire on YouTube, the footage you see out of Gaza, it's so cinematic. Or if you go watch The Night Won't End, which is one of Peabody, it's nominated for multiple Emmys. It won the Royal Television Society Award. The cinematography in it is jaw-dropping. It's astounding. And to think that they're able to do that, that's difficult to do under any circumstances. It's difficult to do here in Washington, D.C. They're doing it there. I don't know how they're even charging batteries or keeping a lens clean, much less they're trying to survive while they're doing it and, in fact, have lost family members while filming with us. And so it's a real credit to this team that we have on the ground in Gaza that we're able to keep producing and putting out these kind of stories.
Josh, I'm glad you mentioned that, because when you watch these documentaries, it's very easy to forget that reporters cannot get into Gaza. In fact, when I was watching this, I thought, wow, these Al Jazeera journalists did an amazing job getting this footage. But that's still not possible. Have you tried to get into Gaza?
No, it would be absolutely impossible for me. I've been with Al Jazeera for 20 years. I'm pretty well known being associated with Al Jazeera. I don't even think I could get into Israel, much less into Gaza at this point. But that, you know, Al Jazeera is one of the only, I think, international media networks in the world that have had reporters on the ground in a working bureau in Gaza since way, way, way before this. And so we've been able to lean on those assets to keep reporting from there as best we can. But, you know, your observation is really at the heart of this story, in that I was listening to Democracy Now, as I usually do. I'm a big fan of Amy's and the show and the reporting they do. And Dr. Feroz Sidwa, who Najib was just talking about, was on. And he said, he was talking about the New York Times piece that he helped put together, where a number of doctors, he collected their observations and the Times ran it. And they ran it oddly as an op-ed piece, even though it wasn't opinion. This is what these doctors, credible doctors, saw. And they ran it with a picture, a CAT scan of Mira, the little girl you mentioned, of her head, showing a bullet lodged in her brain. And then, of course, as you can imagine with the New York New York Times came the backlash, where all these people were saying it was fake, the doctors were lying. Actual doctors came out and said, oh, that's not a bullet in her brain. That looks like maybe the bullet was taped to the side of a child's head. And then they took the CAT scan. And it was pretty like remarkable. And the Times came out and defended the piece and said, we actually have the photos. We chose not to run them because they're too hard to look at. But this has been thoroughly fact checked. So Feroz is on Democracy Now! Talking about this. And he said, I have tons of evidence of children being systematically targeted by Israeli forces in Gaza. And I'm working with, and he said, no less than a dozen reporters in the U.S. that every time I give them new evidence, it seems like their editors raise the bar on the story and they end up not publishing. And I thought, well, that just doesn't sound right at all. So I got in touch with Feroz within a day probably and said, if you've got evidence, let me see it. And Feroz helped connect me to, well, we ended up interviewing more than 20 doctors for the piece. And these doctors, you know, don't necessarily know each other. Some are Muslim, some are Jewish, some are not religious at all. They served in different hospitals in Gaza at different periods during the invasion. And yet in talking to 20 of them, right, their stories started to sound really eerily similar. They all talked about children being shot, and not the kind of like wayward bullet that might catch you in the shoulder or the knee, precision shots to the head and the torso. And they were saying it over and over again. And there was this one doctor, ER doctor out of Chicago, who worked in Southside Chicago, who said, I have seen plenty of children shot working where I do, but it took me, and this is her words, an embarrassingly long time to recognize that this was a pattern there. That your brain wants to think that this must be an accident, this is crossfire or whatever, but they would look around and there would be no partisan fighters. It would just be children coming in over and over and over again. And she said she started to recognize it was a pattern of children being targeted. So our purpose in the piece, Kids Under Fire, was to talk to all these doctors. We put, I forget how many on camera out of the 20 that we interviewed, and then to kind of correlate their stories. But the first time we talked to Mimi, she had only been to Gaza one time. And she told us the story of Mira and this like CAT scan that you saw in the New York Times. And we thought, wouldn't it be amazing if she could reconnect with Mira? Because against all odds, Mira survived. Mm-hmm. So we were able to follow her going back, connect her with our production teams on the ground in Han Yunus, and then be able to film a reunion between Mimi and Mira, which was pretty special. And Mira's story is so telling of what the people in Gaza are going through. This little girl who survives getting shot in the head, having a bullet in her brain, this is not her first time in the ER. She had been hit before by Israeli forces when her family was fleeing south. And in that strike, she had an aunt lose her leg, and maybe another aunt died. I don't remember. And then she also ended up in the hospital, but survived. Then she gets shot in the head, survives. And then while we're filming with her, and she's going to physical therapy, it's another Israeli strike. And this time she survives it again, but her mom lost her leg in the process. Mm-hmm. So now her main caregiver is trying to recover from losing a leg. Mira is going to need multiple operations over the years. And of course, they have no medical facilities there really to deal with this. They want to leave. They have sponsors that will support them. They have a hospital that will take them in America. It just is a matter of Israel says, no, this mom and her little girl can't leave and get medical help. So they're still there.
And there's a sense of U.S. political will, because where we on the reveal side can kind of, you know, continued the Joshua story, we followed Mimi and Feroz on their trip to Capitol Hill, where they're essentially pushing lawmakers to be like, here's what we saw, here's what we're asking for. We're asking for the bare minimum. Can we allow for medical evacuations to get people like Mira out of the country? And Josh, I believe you were there too, but just to kind of see the response that they had received on the Hill, I think it was quite telling.
Najib, can you tell us more about that response?
Yeah.
I mean, it was interesting because they were there for about 2-3 days, maybe a couple of days, a week or so after the Trump administration was sworn in. So you have a new Congress. But I believe that around the same time they were there, like the same day, the Senate was voting on whether to place sanctions on the International Criminal Court. And so it was an interesting time for them to be there. And yet a lot of the meetings that they went to, if not most, were handled with very junior aides, dare I say interns. And it was kind of this like, oh, this is the FaceTime that they're getting with these lawmakers. It's just essentially, yeah, we'll take your meeting and, you know, we'll give you some FaceTime with staff. But, you know, they left a lot of those meetings without any kind of assurances. It's just the kind of the standard, we'll take this to our congressperson, more or less. And they didn't leave with a lot of confidence, if I recall. But it was quite interesting that, you know, they were there on the Hill, and then all of a sudden the next day they were there, they had a trip for the UN. And night and day comparison, because literally the next day they're at the UN and they have a lot more meetings. And this time they're meeting with like very, very important people. Notably, they have a meeting with the Secretary General of the UN. And that contrast between this is who they're meeting with from the US and this is who they're meeting with from like the larger international community, international body. And, you know, it's just it was quite an experience to kind of like report and see that play out.
And Najib, with Dr. Mimi Syed, when she told lawmakers that she saw a pattern of Israeli forces shooting Palestinian children, she said they shrugged their shoulders or shook their heads.
I mean, the thing that Josh was talking about, the New York Times op-ed, I believe both our teams were there when both Mimi, Dr. Syed and Dr. Sidwa had left a meeting. And even in a couple of those meetings, they were raising that same doubt to be like, well, this CT scan that you're showing us, because Mimi had brought that same CT scan with her of Mira to these meetings to be like, look, this is what I saw. This is a scan that I took. Even in some of those congressional meetings or with some of the staff members, there was the same concern raised to be like, I don't know about that photo, or like raising the same concerns that stemmed from some of the criticism that came around that op-ed. And so that question of political will that I think Josh, in our radio collaboration, you know, looking at the Leahy Law, where, you know, it's just like the U.S. has mechanisms for this kind of thing. There are laws in place for this kind of thing. And I think, like, again, Josh, much to your credit, like the interviews that you did, it was this revelation of like, yeah, there are laws, but where is the political will?
We're going to talk about the Leahy Law in a minute, but I want to mention one more doctor, Dr. Feroz Sidwa. We were talking about him. He's also been on the show. He says, quote, I kept a diary while I was there. And actually, it wasn't until I came back, until I realized I saw a lot of kids shot in the head. I saw a lot of kids maimed. A war does not explain why half of the people in your ER are 10 years or younger. Josh, in the film Kids Under Fire, you interview Miranda Cleland with Defense for Children International Palestine. She says they have more than two decades of evidence showing this is a regular occurrence, also in the West Bank. And Israeli soldiers are never held accountable. She said the reason they do it is because no one's stopping them. She says it's a war crime to target a child with lethal force. Now, it's illegal for the U.S. government to provide support to foreign military units accused of human rights violations. As Najib said, it's known as the Leahy Law, named after Senator Leahy, who sponsored it. You had a very revealing interview with Tim Reeser, who drafted the law. He says there's probably not a unit in the Israeli army that either has not been trained and or received equipment from the U.S., but it's the only country the law has not been applied to. So can you tell us more about that?
Let's begin with Miranda. The Defense for Children International Palestine put out a report where they looked at a 10-month period beginning with October 2023 through July, the following July. And they were looking at Palestinian children killed by Israeli security forces. And this is an important part here, not in Gaza. They were looking at the occupied West Bank and occupied East Jerusalem. And in that 10-month period, they documented 141 children killed by Israeli security forces. That's a rate of almost one every other day. These are children that they were able to document in their stories. They were able to name them. And so they're like noted. Now change the page to Gaza and the children there are being killed at a rate that we can't even keep up with, that we'll never know the numbers. We'll never know all the names because there's no real system. The systems have all been destroyed in the hospitals. The doctors aren't really keeping like detailed medical records. They're doing what they can as fast as they can over and over and over. And so I found that really striking, that kind of impunity. And, I live in Washington, D.C., and there's always like tons of debate about what the founders meant when they wrote this law or that law. Well, we have the Leahy Law, and we have the guy who wrote it. And so the State Department, since the Leahy Law has been passed in the 90s, they have always found ways to not apply it to Israel. And they say they construe it this way or they construe it that way. But it occurred to me, it's like you don't have to guess at what the law is about. The guy who literally wrote it is across the river in Arlington. We can just sit down and ask him.
Well, and to that point, Josh, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but we only have a couple minutes, but you have another revealing interview, and I want to play a clip here. This is from Kids Under Fire with Charles Blaha, a retired State Department official.
This impunity is further supported by loopholes in USAID to Israel.
Israel's different.
Charles Blaha led a State Department office responsible for vetting thousands of allegations of human rights violations by foreign military units receiving U.S. funding.
So there is a special Leahy vetting process for Israel.
Of countries receiving vast U.S. assistance, only Israel has a separate vetting process, the Israel Leahy vetting form. Unlike others, Blaha says the U.S. accepts Israel's investigations without question, with final Leahy decisions made at the highest levels, including the Secretary of State.
Why do we have this forum for this one country?
Because Israel receives assistance that's untraceable. It's a very elaborate, Byzantine, complicated, delay-ridden, high-level process that has been at fault for the State Department never finding a single Israeli unit had ever committed a gross violation of human rights. I signed off on that. I signed off for two reasons. I believed at the time that the State Department would implement that process in good faith. And I believed at the time in the Israeli military justice system. Both of those beliefs turned out to be incorrect.
So you've gone 180 degrees on two major beliefs that are consequential in a lot of people's lives. How does that sit with you?
I don't really know what to say. If I'd objected at the time, I certainly would have been overridden, but my name wouldn't be on the approval line. I was mistaken. I was wrong.
A cynic from the outside would see the vetting form as Byzantine by design. The purpose and the point of this was to offer obfuscation for Israeli forces to do what they want and not be hassled by U.S. laws.
I recognized at the time that it was very, very complicated, but I believed it would be implemented in good faith. I didn't think it would come to this, these thousands and thousands of deaths.
That is Charles Blaha, retired State Department official, speaking to today's guest, Josh Rushing, in the documentary Kids Under Fire. Josh, we only have about a minute left, but what an incredible interview with Charles Blaha. I'm guessing that a lot of people don't know a thing about this, about what he laid out for you.
Okay, because we're so short on time, the one thing I want to tell you. So Charles Blaha goes by Cobb, retired from the State Department after 32 years, and he was responsible partly for the State Department not applying the Leahy Law to Israel. He now sees how terrible that was, that Israel is not an actual partner ally to the U.S. or a good actor in this situation, obviously. And he is now a senior advisor on DAWN. DAWN is a democracy and something in the Middle East. It was Jamal Khashoggi's organization that he started. And notably, he's working with Josh Charles, who also left the State Department over Gaza, or who did leave the State Department over Gaza. And they're part of the lawsuit pursuing the U.S. government for not applying the Leahy Law. So if there's any silver lining or hope to this, is that people like Josh Paul and Cobb are finding the conscience, and they are the guys who know what should be done here and how we can actually challenge this within the system.
And quick final thoughts from you, Najib, 30 seconds. Are you planning to interview other doctors? What are you planning to do on reporting from Gaza from here?
I mean, I think we're going to continue to, we at Reveal are going to, continue to follow these developments. I think a component of the Reveal side also looks at the international approach and response to this, looking at specifically what's happening in the International Court of Justice, the ICJ. So it's hard to say exactly what, but I mean, unfortunately, this is a story that isn't going away. But would highly, highly recommend to anyone that's listening, both on the Al Jazeera side, going to YouTube and watching Kids Under Fire, but also looking up Reveal and,
Thank you. Najib Amini is producer for Reveal, and Josh Rushing is founding member of Al Jazeera English. Thank you both so much for joining us, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.